What this impact is, John tells us, is it's actually simply love. It's God wanting to give himself. And the gift of self, of course, is what love is. So God is simply wanting to give himself to us. And he gives himself to us everywhere, all the time. But most beautifully, of course, in the person of Jesus. But then John went on to talk about the obstacles, what we can put in the road, and what we can be scared to let go of, and he's encouraging us to let go of it. And now he makes the important point that it's God who makes the space. We can see what needs to be done, perhaps, partly, and it's revealed to us, but we'd be very mistaken if we thought we could then do it. It's God who makes the space for love in me and in you, and this is what John calls night. So this whole presentation is really on what we sometimes call the dark night of the soul. Ian Matthew very beautifully heads the chapter healing. Healing us from whatever it is that is a barrier to love. Ian Matthew writes, "The symbolic quality of night. It's a symbol which speaks before we ever try to decode it." And these are some of the thoughts he puts forward. You've got your own for night. Well, darkness, solitude, fear, the unknown, immobility, stillness, rest, peace, silence, sleep, dreams, moonlight, adventure, owls, stars, refreshment, friendship, romance, perception. If these are the residences, then such is the journey of faith. And Matthew goes on to say, what resonances did John find? We could highlight these. Blessedness and mystery. John's quest for union is answered in the darkness. It cannot but be blessed. And I'll now read to you a translation of his poem on the dark night. So dark the night, at rest, and hushed my house. I went with no one knowing upon a lover's quest. Ah, the sheer grace so blessed. My eager heart with love aflame and glowing. In darkness, hid from sight, I went by secret ladder, safe and sure. Ah, grace of sheer delight, so softly veiled by night, hushed now my house, in darkness and secure. Hidden in that glad night, regarding nothing as I stole away, no one to see my flight, no other guide or light, save one that in my heart burned bright as day. Surer than noonday sun, guiding me from the start, this radiant light led me to that dear one, waiting for me, well known, somewhere apart where no one came in sight. Dark of the night, my guide, fairer by far than dawn when stars grow dim, night that has united the lover and the bride, transforming the beloved into him. There on my flowered breast, that none but he might ever own or keep, he stayed, sinking to rest. And softly I caressed my love, while cedars gently fanned his sleep. Breeze from the turret blew, ruffling his hair. Then with his tranquil hand, wounding my neck, I knew nothing. My senses flew a touch of peace, too deep to understand. Forgetting all, my quest ended. I stayed lost to myself at last. All ceased. My face was pressed upon my love at rest, with all my cares among the lilies cast. Lorena McKennett, in her Mask and Mirror, has a version of this, which you might like now to listen to.
Thank you.
Ian Matthew writes, night carries all the weight of the Lord's Passover. Night signifies that which comes upon us, takes us out of our own control. It announces that as a place of resurrection. A God who heals in darkness, this is John's word of hope in a destabilized world. Contemplation, prayer where I am no longer a tourist, where sense has shifted to spirit, where plenty of insights and aspirations have given way to a less picturesque, more total form of togetherness with God. And John himself writes, contemplation is nothing but a hidden, peaceful, loving inflow of God. It is given room, it will inflame the spirit with love. And John also writes, the dark night is a certain flowing in of God into the human creature, which purges it of the ignorance and imperfections belonging to its very nature. God teaches it in a strange, secret way, educating it to perfect love. God does this himself. All the creature can do is be lovingly attentive, listening, receptive, allowing itself to be enlightened without understanding how. And in one of his letters, John of the Cross writes, it's a great grace from God when God so darkens and impoverishes the soul that the senses cannot deceive it, and that it may not go astray. It has nothing to do but to walk in the beaten path of the law of God and of the Church, living solely by faith, dim and true, in certain hope and perfect charity, looking for all its blessings in heaven, living here as a pilgrim, a beggar, an exile, an orphan, desolate, possessing nothing, and looking for everything from God. Ian Matthew has this small phrase, night is God's love felt as pain. It's widening, purifying, and making space. God's love is doing that. God gives himself. God makes space for himself. This is the night in which what is felt is my resistance to losing control, to letting go, to being consumed. And Ian Matthew adds, night assures us that there is somewhere to go, that only God can take us there, that God does intend to take us there, that God takes us there in darkness, and that darkness must be lived in faith. Night is taking us not to some soiree for the self-preoccupied elite, but to the heart of the world's suffering. Night declares the world's wounds to be spaces through which God may graciously enter. John's poem touches a universal chord. It's the song of the poor Jesus on Easter morning. I'll just read for you one of the short parts of the Exultet, which we sing on Easter night, Easter Vigil, where the church has these words: this is the night when Jesus Christ broke the chains of death and rose triumphant from the grave. The power of this holy night dispels all evil, washes guilt away, restores lost innocence, brings mourners joy. It casts out hatred, brings us peace, and humbles earthly pride. Night truly blessed, when heaven is wedded to earth, and we are reconciled with God. That's the song of the church in amazement at the emptying of the tomb and the rising of Christ in the night. Ian Matthew gives the following title to the next part: there is somewhere to go. And he writes, sense means body, imagination, emotion. Spirit is there where resources converge. It's the home of choice, of conscience, of self. These terms, sense and spirit, are dynamic. Where sense is Lord, the whole being is sensual, hostage to needs of its own creation. If the person learns to live from within, she becomes spiritual. And with that, her sensuality comes back home. All this implies a journey, a surrender of sense to spirit, and of spirit to the Holy Spirit. And because surrender feels like dying, John calls it a night journey. John is saying that every dimension of the human person has to strive towards God. And discovering the inadequacy of its striving must come under God's transforming hand. It is a journey. There is somewhere to go, and it has to be God. Ian Matthew continues, if night first tells us that there is somewhere to go, it also announces that we can't get there on our own. Healing has to come, and we have to learn to look for it to come. The waiting is part of the healing. And these are just my comments. The journey is to God. My guide is the Spirit of Jesus that God pours into my heart. Engaged in this journey, all my human God-given potential is harnessed for loving. Longing for eternity keeps my present horizon from closing in. Only the transcendent God can take me there. I cannot heal myself. I cannot secure my deepest longings. The flame and the spring can come only from the heart of God. John traces the path not so that I can predict, but to encourage me to surrender to God's guidance and to the gravity of God's grace. This healing darkness is an inflow of God. Ian Matthew writes, any suffering can become night. For it to be night, there have to be three elements. For it to be sheer grace, which is John of the Cross's term, in darkness leading to union, there has to be three elements. One, an inflow of God. Without that, suffering is simply suffering. Two, there has to be darkness. That is, the suffering with the accent on bewildering suffering. Suffering that doesn't make sense, something we can't grasp, understand. And thirdly, there has to be a creative response, which we call faith. We have to want to be in that love, to believe. And there has to be acceptance. Any suffering, says Ian Matthew, can become night. For that, we need an inflow of God, we need darkness, and a belief, a creative response, accepting the darkness. I haven't got this in music, so I'll just read it to you. It's another one of John of the Cross's poems called Fonte, Spring. He composed it during the dark night in that Toledo prison, where, as I think I mentioned the other day, he could hear the rushing of the Caudal, the river way down below, echoing against the cliffs, and he felt it as a longing, a spring, a longing for the Eucharist, which they were depriving him of, and he wrote this. How well I know the living spring that flows, though it is night. That ever-living spring is hidden fast, and yet I found its dwelling place at last, although by night. Its origin, all that I know or see in the beginning from it came to be, but in the night. Nothing on earth so beautiful as this. Heaven and earth meet here, and meeting kiss, though it is night. Down to its deepest depth man may not go, nor ford its flooding waters. This I know, though it is night. Light, source of light, by which all light was made, whose brilliance never falters, cannot fade, though it is night. So mighty and unceasing is its flow, it waters heaven, earth, and realms below, although by night. Something I know of its almighty force, the flowing stream that issues from this source, although by night. From these two streams wells forth another flow, yet neither stream precedes it, this I know. Though it is night. Brackets, he's speaking of the Trinity clearly. This deathless spring hidden in living bread, Eucharist, brings life to us who, lacking it, were dead, for it is night. To all that lives, come, drink your fill, it calls, come to this water, for the darkness falls, and it is night. This living spring, so very dear to me, is here, within the bread of life I see, though it is night. Commenting on that poem, Ian Matthew writes, in Fonte, John shares his faith in the Eucharist. For him, Eucharist is not simply our ritual galvanizing our togetherness. It's an act of the Trinity, involving us in their togetherness. Nor is Eucharist a merely passive object of adoration. It is an activity of Christ, powerfully summoning his creatures to the water. John sees Christ here, active, torrential, receiving the full force of all that God is and unleashing its flow upon us, the everlasting fountain released in the living bread to give us life. We're all familiar with those final words of the Last Supper discourse of Jesus in John's Gospel, where Jesus prays that they may be one. And customarily, but not centrally, we tend to talk about ecumenism, that they may be one. And that's quite valid, but secondary in John's Gospel. It's not so much Jesus praying that we be one with each other, or that his disciples all be one in love with each other, important though that be. Jesus' prayer is for each disciple and for the community of disciples to have that unity that he has with God. That's the one that he wants. So insofar as I'm in communion with God and you're in communion with God, yes, that is the source of the mission of the church and the ecumenism for which we long. The one is living the life of the Trinity. Just a few comments of my own. The triune God is the fountain. I am graced to see God present and active in the suffering, to look for the movement of God's Spirit. Suffering makes me aware of my incapacity and my need, and so faces me towards the Beloved, who alone can draw me into the communion which alone heals and fills my life. So this healing darkness is an inflow of God. It's also bewildering. And it's about faith. Ian Matthew writes, healing comes particularly in situations that take us out of our own control. In the kind of pain that is bewildering. The mystical night, the divine approach is registered in mind and feelings, but registering as painful contrast. Contrast between the love we experience and the situation in which we find ourselves. John is calling that suffering, the place not of chaos, but of transformation. In writing night, John does not want to say, it's all right, you see, because this is the explanation. He wants to say, it's not all right. It's a mess. But you're not alone in this mess. God is present in this. Now is the time not to lose faith in God. This, says Ian Matthew, is the third element tonight. Not losing faith in God. When the negative comes upon you, writes Ian Matthew, then remember your desire to be free. Free from the personal weakness which was crippling you. It's here that God is doing it, and it's important not to panic or run away. Climbing a mountain speaks of communion where the goal is not to sink a solitary flagpole on the summit, but to make an altar of oneself there for a sacrifice of love. Just a small bracket. The word sacrifice has been totally misinterpreted for so long that we've forgotten its meaning. You may not have, but generally people have. Just look at the word for a minute. Sacrifice. It comes from two Latin roots. S-A-C-R, sacred, means holy. And only God is holy. A place is called holy, a sanctuary, not because the place has any particular quality, but because God is there. So the Holy One is there. A person is said to be holy. Paul even talks of the whole community at Corinth as the saints, the holy ones. And yet there's a lot of sin going on. So holy is not morally good, it's someone that God has chosen to be in. So therefore, that has implications for behaviour, of course. But sacred means holy. And the second part is in many English words, you know it, facere, facere, to make. So sacrifice is something that's made holy, meaning taken into, penetrating into the mystery of God's presence. It has nothing to do with blood, with killing. There's not the slightest negativity in that word. But there is in our consciousness because of the way the word's been abused. A sacrifice of love is a loving communion where we allow God to make us one with him. Back to Ian Matthew. John gives us the schemas not to help us predict, but to encourage us to surrender. To do what Mary did at the Incarnation, to do what Jesus did on the cross, to do what John did at Toledo. Don't struggle for something you once had and have now gone beyond. Instead, take heart, persevere patiently, brackets, don't run away, without pain, let God carry you. Trust in God in loving awareness, loving attentiveness. We may have to live as if God sustained us in order to discover that God does sustain us. We may have to live as if to discover that it's true. We are called to trust, not to panic, but to hold on, not to collapse into the pain or to indulge it, but to rely on God, to be attentive to God's presence and action in my soul. When negative experiences come upon me, I am to remember my longing and my need for God's inflowing love, inflowing life. And I'll give the last words to Ian Matthew, who writes, grieve. Address what can be addressed. Don't condone the sin that may be causing the situation, but trust that the Father holds this situation in his hands and will turn it to blessing.